You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 30th of May, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Is it all doom and gloom for the North American printed daily, particularly in New York? What is keeping the editors and printers of Hamburg busy this week? And does La Résistance live on in France? A whole world of questions to answer this week on The Stack. Today on The Stack, we'll be going to New York, where a once iconic daily newspaper is facing some very dangerous times. Will it survive, and in what form? We'll be hearing some analysis.
That's the problem with both tabloids. You know, historically, their bread and butter, you know, has been the ability to move copies off the newsstand, and obviously fewer and fewer people are buying newspapers on the newsstand or subscribing to them.
And we'll also be joined by two eminently qualified journalists who will be telling us what those all-important European newsweeklies say. We'll be flicking through the pages of Die Zeit, Stern, L'Express, L'Obs, and more. Plus, we'll browse the Brazilian newsstand in praise of one rather seductive surfing title.
Well, my magazine of choice is Trip, which is actually a Brazilian magazine that talks about surf and girls. It's a very unusual choice because, to be honest, I don't surf and I don't like girls.
All that coming up on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, before we introduce our guests, let's turn to New York and to the newspaper that was the basis for the famous Superman films, The Daily Planet. The films were, in fact, shot at the offices of the New York Daily News, and as we all know, much has changed in those intervening decades. It is not news that these are hard times for newspapers. In the US, more print journalists per capita have lost their jobs than workers in any other major industry. Dozens of venerable mastheads have disappeared from newsstands. They may shortly be joined by the most venerable one yet, the New York Daily News, which 25 years ago had more weekday readers than any other paper in America, is seeking a buyer. And rumor has it that the sale might see the rumbustious tabloid becoming a solely digital publication. Well, earlier in the week on the Monocle Daily, Andrew Muller and Dominic Reynolds spoke to Joe Pompeo, senior media reporter for Capital New York.
I think that the numbers tell the whole story. As you noted, this was once, had more circulation than any newspaper in America. At its peak, I think it was something like close to 5 million. Its weekday print circulation now is hovering around 300,000 or even a little less. Obviously, there have been a lot of layoffs over the past few years. They've downsized. I think he is probably at a point where he is ready to get this money-losing proposition off his hands.
I mean, it's sort of seen as not quite a stablemate, but perhaps a parallel title to the New York Post in a lot of ways. But the New York Post seems to be doing rather better. How come?
Well, I wouldn't say that at all. Actually, the New York Post, is rumored to lose tens upon tens of millions of dollars. The news, according to my sources and what's been reported also in other news coverage, is losing somewhere between 20 to 30 million. These newspaper magnates keep the numbers private, so we don't know. But certainly, both tabloids are definitely struggling right now in terms of their revenues.
I realize this is a tough question. In fact, in media terms, it's possibly the tough question. But is there a way to make money from the New York Daily News or a paper like it? Or would any prospective buyer be accepting a certain amount of annual loss in return for purchasing influence?
You know, certainly at the beginning, they're going to be accepting some significant loss. One of the reported potential buyers, Jimmy Finkelstein, who owns the Hill newspaper and as well in Washington, has said that he'd be looking to make this a digital-only proposition. So right there, you would pretty much jettison the biggest costs that are causing the paper to lose money, which is the cost of actually putting it out in print. The problem, as you know, obviously, is that revenues on the digital side have not nearly caught up to the lucrative print revenues that have long boosted up newspapers like the Daily News and all the papers in the industry that are struggling right now.
And I suppose added to that, a title like this one, moving online, wouldn't necessarily have a readership that was going to follow it from the physical to the digital world, would it?
Well, their readership has changed online in the past few years, especially they have expanded their web audience. I think there's somewhere around 30 million unique monthly visitors, but this is mostly sort of like national sensational stories that appeal to a national audience broadly, as opposed to the content that for the most part goes into the print edition every day. And that's the problem with both tabloids. You know, historically, their bread and butter, you know, has been the ability to move copies off the newsstand. And obviously, fewer and fewer people are buying newspapers on the newsstand or subscribing to them. And so I think that the digital transition was always going to be a little trickier for the tabloids, you know, for that reason.
Does that tradition of sensationalism, and the Daily News in particular has been criticized in recent years for plunging down market in search of readers, does it end up making them less attractive to buyers, who of course will have other interests and may have, as they see it, a certain image to maintain?
I think that depends on, you know, who the buyer is. You know, the more sensational stories that they've picked up on that have done well for them online is what has scaled their audience to a size that might be attractive to a buyer who's looking for scale, a buyer who, you know, might be more interested in trying to command some influence with New York City power brokers, might be more interested in the print edition. So I think that, you know, we'll have to wait and see who the potential buyer ends up being, and you know, what they really want the paper for or the publication for, and what type of publication they want it to continue to be going forward.
That was Joe Pompeo, senior media reporter for Capital New York, speaking about the danger that may lie ahead for the New York Daily News's printed edition. You're listening to The Stack. And you're back with The Stack here on a Saturday with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, we turn our attention to the slightly rosier printed world of the News Weekly, something that, on the European continent at least, is seen as still a venerated journalistic medium. Imke, who I'm going to introduce in a second, will disagree. To take us to a pick of the best weeklies that are published in France, I have and am joined by France 24's woman in London, Bénédicte Paviot. And for those wholesome German weeklies, we have Die Zeit's Imke Henkel. Imke, I started with you, and we've had this discussion before on programs. I was even talking to someone from one of the German trades before we went on air, the magazine Horizont, which, of course, is there every week, week in, week out, covering the state of German news media. And I was talking about, you know, I love going to a good old Hauptbahnhof. I love getting off the train in Paris, even at that not-so-great newsstand at Gare du Nord. You see that little relay
Don't
there.
Don't mention Gare du Nord.
I know.
It's getting one.
But I think the Continental Newsstand is incredibly exciting, and I know that people can sort of, you know, be hanging their heads low in Hamburg and elsewhere, but there's so much to read, and there's new launches, you know, despite it's not great for everyone, but even, you know, big old Gunnar and Yar, lots of publishers are bringing out new things that there seems to be a willingness. To both of you, and maybe I'll start with you, do you think that there's the Anglo-Saxon view of things? Because even in London, we look a bit to New York. And of course, New York is driven by what happens in Silicon Valley. So everything that's proclaimed by all these great companies, we have to sort of toe that line. And is there, of course, as we know, the French like to sort of go their own way, not just to be contrary, but do you think that there is a good spirit, or is it generally sort of negative in lots of newsrooms and boardrooms for media companies in France?
The media landscape is changing because, as in the Anglo-Saxon world, indeed on the planet, there is this migration. We've gone from mainstream terrestrial televisions, where those channels had a captive audience, and same thing really for newspapers. So everybody's struggling to change, get onto digital, and we know that it is doom and gloom as far as money's concerned and the financing of French newspapers. Interesting that French newspapers are far less read than British newspapers, but that's not the point, Tyler, because the point point is that they carry gravitas, they carry weight. What they say matters. Le Monde, Le Figaro, Libération. And actually in France, the big phenomenon is not the dailies. Mm. And it's not a secret. But for anybody who doesn't know, you want to read the weeklies.
Which
and
is why we're here today. Weeklies. Exactly. And again, does some of that chime with you? Of course, you're based here. But do you feel it's the same spirit across the when you jump across the border from France into Germany as well?
Actually, I love the positive spin that he put in German newspapers. But it is seen, actually, as much gloomier in the business Germany. Because, we have, as in Britain, we have the declining circulation and all the rest of it. And I feel, actually, that there's far more innovative spirit in Britain. There's far more happening. And it's not just looking at New York. Mm. Actually, interestingly, the newspaper you didn't want to mention, that is at King's Cross, they actually look to China. They look to other European countries, very much so. They have a German, actually, developer for digital. So, of course, in Germany, you have all these new launches. But you know how they're called? They're called panic shoots. That's actually what... what one editor-in-chief of a very interesting magazine, Cicero, and once told me.
Yes.
Cicero is like, in Britain you would have Prospect. It's an intellectual magazine.
Monthly.
Yes, monthly, not read by many people, but it's beautifully made. And he says he's absolutely fed up with giving away it for free. So he would love him.
He can have a desk in this building. Okay, we have a lot to get through in the next sort of, 25 or so minutes. Benedict, is that Lubs? I can't see which paper you have.
L'Express.
You've got L'Express. Okay.
Let's start with a little financial scandal, shall we?
Okay, why not?
All right. Well, we're revisiting someone. Somebody who's world famous. His name is Jérôme Kerviel. So he is that infamous rogue trader at SocGen, Société Générale, to give it its full name, who went to prison. He's not a crazy rogue trader. He's given an exclusive interview to my colleagues in L'Express, and there are new allegations swirling, and they turn this on its head. It is being alleged by not just anybody. The woman who was in charge of the whole investigation since 2008, that in fact his bosses knew exactly what was going on. There had been several warnings, so they knew about his high-risk 50 billion euro trades. Now, what is interesting, talking of a new landscape, is that this story has been broken by my colleagues of Mediapart. Mediapart, who are an investigative news website, who are really making a real name for themselves and giving, whether it's 24-hour news channels in France and elsewhere, a run for their money. Now, this site has called for a new inquiry or an inquiry to be reopened, in fact, and accuses French prosecutors, this is very serious stuff, of uncritically swallowing Société Générale's story, hotly, categorically denied by Société Générale, I must underline. Now, this police commander, remember her name, Nathalie Leroy, because she is really sticking her neck out. Mm. She says she's felt manipulated now. She realizes in hindsight that she, in a sense, because she did not have enough resources at her disposal, both, I suppose, in men and women working for her and also money, she took everything that Société Générale were giving her. For example, interviews of Jérôme Kerviel that had little edits in them. So this is very serious and will be looked at, not just by other people in France and the political class and financial institutions, but also across the EU and across the world, because this kind of gambling and speculation in financial markets is really worrying for everybody. I mean, it's like a casino.
Absolutely. Really going on. This is a story in L'Express. You talk, though, about Mediapart, and it's very interesting how we have so many interesting, foundation-based, often investigative firms out there now doing extraordinary journalism. Was this sort of a co-investigation, or has L'Express picked up on something that Mediapart broke the story? How has it been co-authored?
It's the latter. It's Mediapart who actually make it their job to go and find things. They really have a very strong investigative team that one really has to respect. And then what L'Express has done is they've gone in, looked at it themselves, and obtained this exclusive interview with Jérôme Kerviel.
Excellent. Are we seeing in Germany a similar state as well? As newspapers, of course, have been challenged, probably shutting down investigative teams as well, that we've seen new players spring up in this space also in Germany, Imke?
Yes, absolutely. It's very interesting. We have these corporations. There is actually Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is a very interesting paper because it sort of went down. You felt it was losing spirit and now has relaunched itself. They had a kind of innovation group, internal renovation group, so they did a lot of new things. And they're also cooperating with a team from, actually, interestingly, public radio. NDR.
So Bayerisch, oh, no, NDR.
NDR. Okay. Interesting. Norddeutscher
Rundfunk.
Norddeutscher Rundfunk, yeah. Precisely. So, which is sort of surprising. And I think they have a third party in there. And they are bringing up very interesting stuff. I think they were behind these tax evasion and files that turn up from Switzerland. And actually, the other Spiegel, actually, is really put in the corner by them. They have to pull up the socks and see where they get. Mm. There's another small group, which is probably comparable to Mediapart with Correctif, which again does corporations and is specifically founded to do this kind of investigation. So there are a lot of things are happening there. But
you're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. My guest today, Benedict Paviot of France 24, and also Die Zeit's Imke Henkel. We're going away for a short break. When we come back, we're off to Brazil.
The brand new M24 iPhone app brings you the full radio offering from Monocle 24. Listen live to our four daily news programmes or catch the freshest tunes on our playlist. And of course, there's the Time Shift, where you can delve into our show archive and listen at your leisure. All our great magazine programmes covering everything from international affairs to culture, design to urbanism, food and drink to entrepreneurship. It's all available anytime on the new, free Monocle 24 iPhone app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Tyler Relate. Now, for our new feature on the show each week, a friendly Midori House voice will talk us through what has caught their eye on the international newsstand and why. Last week, you heard me exalting the very lacquered virtues of Thailand Tatler. This week, we have something very different as we cross continents and head to Brazil. Our Fernando Augusto Pacheco speaks now in praise of Sao Paulo-based Trippy.
Nós somos jovens, jovens, jovens.
Well, my magazine of choice is Trip, which is actually a Brazilian magazine that talks about surf and girls. It's a very unusual choice because, to be honest, I don't surf and I don't like girls. But the interesting thing about Trip, that even though it's a surf magazine, they changed in recent years. They're becoming more political, so they have very, very interesting political reportage with some quite brave stories with themes that range from abortion to gay marriage. But there's always like photo shoots with guys surfing. There's this kind of relaxed attitude, which is in a way very Brazilian. And in fact, the first time when I got in touch with the magazine, I remember I was a kid during my holidays because we had a house in the north coast in São Paulo on the beach. And when I went to the news agent, they just sold like Trip, because, you know, there's a lot of surfers in that region, and, you know, other gossip magazines. And then I bought it, and it was quite interesting because there is some nudity, you know, there's like, for, it's some sort of Playboy, but with more taste. And they chose only kind of surfer girls, you know, not with too many plastic surgeries. So it felt quite natural as well. The covers used to be quite generic, just a man with his surfboard or kind of a pretty girl, sometimes, you know, showing everything, but always in the nature, you know, they liked that. It was never kind of artificial in a palace in Rome like Playboy would do. But they changed recently. And in fact, because I think the magazine is becoming more successful, they have two covers of the time. One, it's still kind of a surf image or a half-naked woman. And the other one is usually kind of not a celebrity, but someone who gave like a proper interview or a politician. Like, let's talk about abortion. Then they had a woman like saying, yes, I did abortion, which in Brazil is quite controversial. So there's two cover choices nowadays. And I have to say, there's an interesting development for the magazine. They have a woman's version of the magazine as well, which was launched quite recently. And the name of the magazine is TPM, which is the name we gave, I think in English people say PMS, so pre-menstrual syndrome. And it's quite an unusual name for a woman's magazine as well. And again, it's definitely not your average Vogue. I don't think I've seen a magazine similar to Trip anywhere in the world. And that's why perhaps a German editor, he was in Brazil and he was reading Trip and he was so fascinated, he decided to launch a German version of Trip, which is sold in Germany, Austria and Switzerland. That's quite a new thing because it's usually the opposite. Brazil have versions of foreign magazines like GQ, Vogue, Glamour, name it. You know, if you go to a Brazilian newsagent, there's so many versions, but now it's the opposite. We're actually exporting an idea. And I read the German Trip. Of course, I don't understand German, but the layout's quite quite similar. They have some stories from the Brazilian version, but they also have their own stories. So that's quite an unusual thing about Trip, and that's why I like it so much.
Well, he doesn't like surfing, he doesn't like girls, but he doesn't mind a fit surfer in low-slung trunks, obviously, if he likes a magazine like a Trippi. That was our Fernando Augusto Pacheco. I'm in studio with Die Zeit's Imke Henkel and also France 24's Benedikt Pavio. Have you come across it, the German edition of the Trippi, Imke? Have you seen it on the German newsstand?
No, I have to say I haven't. And I'm wondering, well, actually, you can surf in Germany. I haven't come across it either. But it's pretty much time for you seeing the theme of there's a new magazine every day.
Well, we were actually funny. We were talking, though, about the Deutsche Zeitung, and it is amazing when you can be in the heart of Munich, though, and they're surfing on the Isar River, which is in the English Regatta. And
yes. Kind of,
I was actually going by and I thought, is this something which is just staged for cameras from time to time in a tourist
city?
No, there are people out with surfboards at lunchtime in their wetsuits. In the heart, going through the rapids in the heart of Munich, which
and they're pretty good. Yeah, no,
they are good.
No, you're right. It's amazing. Yes, I watched that. I had the same impression as you. As a sort of the must be stage. No, yeah. They are there all the time.
It's happening.
I love Fernando's too much plastic surgery. What is too much? Please tell us. Maybe we can have a contest. Yes, particularly in Brazil, and the fact that there's a woman's version of it.
Yeah.
That is very interesting concept.
Yeah, and I wonder if he likes that more because obviously, I wonder if that's sort of the flip side as well. Then there's more surfers maybe with the trunks off. Which might appeal to him.
Give
anyway,
surfing a whole
yes,
new
exactly. Much to explore. Now you, let's go back to France.
Yeah.
What title do we have there?
This is L'Obs, what used to be called Le Nouvel Observateur, the New Observer, in a sense. If I translate it, it's page 79, and in fact, it's the cover story, which is called L'Esprit de Résistance. So, Résistance with a capital R, which means La Résistance, so the movement of the Résistance during the Second World War. And it's a very interesting elderly now sociologist called Edgar Morin. He talks about his involvement as a very, very young man. And indeed, one forgets, but actually a lot of these people who were heroes, the ones we know about, the ones we don't know about, the ones who survived, the ones who died, were extraordinarily young. And he talks about the serendipity, in a sense, of people being remembered and honoured. And the reason that this is particularly poignant and pertinent this week is that France has just honoured 4 members of the French Résistance with a ceremony at the Panthéon Mausoleum in Paris. And President Hollande, as every French president in a sense before him, praised the spirit of Résistance fighters at that ceremony. Edgar Morin talks about the fact that there are at least 2 very great threats that he sees facing the world today, and that is the fanaticism of certain religious movements, and also, he says, the completely worrying power of speculation, financial speculation. Mm. So that ties into our first story with Jérôme Kerviel.
Do you think if you are sitting around the story conference at L'Obs and they're thinking up the magazine, how much do you see, Benedikt, that this is also a bit of a manifesto for the title as well, that here you bring this gentleman, you make him the cover story of the issue, you talk about resistance, and in a way trying to almost use modern day applications of what he's saying as a bit of a rallying cry for everything that France has, of course, been through, certainly since the events of January.
I think that would be very much why, because of the Charlie Hebdo attacks on the 7th of January and the killing of my colleague's murder in broad daylight during a news conference when they were planning the weekly. You know, this was just absolutely appalling and, of course, resonated. And we know that on the Sunday, only a few days later, there was this incredible rally in Paris of tens of thousands of people, rallies throughout France, and also that attack, we should remember, on the kosher supermarket. Mm. And what Edgar Morin says is, you know, we're finding this stage in the 21st century reasons to attack a Jew, to attack an Arab, it's really this segregation and finding difference. What we need is actually better understanding and a greater altruism. Mm. But he says also young people are not being taught really how best to live and how best to contribute to society.
Mm. Would we see story conference in Munich or Frankfurt or Hamburg, Imke, the same type of cover story where you would be bringing some contemporary, well, let's say in this sense, middle of last century hero, and one could argue that, yes, there are heroes that did emerge out of Germany, obviously not as many, but nevertheless, that you would have this type of, manifesto-style story. Would Der Spiegel do something like this? Certainly probably not Stern today, but would a Der Spiegel...
I can't see the Spiegel doing it.
No.
I mean, having said that, Didn't they do recently a Bismarck thing?
Who are your heroes today, actually?
Very interesting questions. And
that's
and
another it documentary. Will be,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And some paper, and I have to admit, I can't quite remember, but we hadn't had a cover story about Bismarck as a hero of reuniting the fractured Germany at the time in a war against France, unfortunately, and unfortunately for the further history. But it could possibly be the side, because they're more laid back, they're more... But I think it's far more a French idea, intellectual idea, intellectual of high quality, and actually also, I think, referring to education system that still probably allows for people to connect to the story, because I just assume that up to now, I know there's a big discussion in France going on about changing education, but up to now, the education system is probably better and more... It's stricter, definitely, and more severe than in Germany.
Just in the interest of time, and we want to, of course, give you fair time as well, I think you have, that is Stern, it looks like.
Yes.
Out on a Thursday. And what caught your eye? They've got a Google cover, and obviously...
Yes. Oh, perhaps, so have I.
Yeah, so perhaps also, you know, Germany has become something of the poster child as, I'd say more so than France, actually, in being outspoken, at least on an international stage, against Google. Or is Stern giving Google a big hug?
Yes, they are.
Oh,
that
surprise,
is fascinating,
surprise.
But you're absolutely surprised, really surprised. But you're absolutely right. Of course, Germany has become very much the world leader, and several German publishers speaking out against Google, being very, very critical, very fierce against Google, and Google has, as we know, tremendous difficulties in European court. And I think that is one of the reasons why they're actually willing to talk to German and probably French, because France is in that as well, in publishers. And actually, interestingly, you said at the beginning that British newspapers are so much looking to New York and to... I think it's the same in Germany. We look to New York Times, and we very much look to Silicon Valley and to Google, and several publishers and editors-in-chief have been traveled there and came back. And on the one hand, there's this big fear that Google will just swallow us up. And on the other hand, there's this huge fascination. And actually, Die Zeit had a cover story last week, and one of their editors managed to get an interview with Larry Page, and was very favorable, and was actually describing his ideas. And Stern does something similar this week, and they had an interview with Sergey Brin, the other founder of Google.
Oh, that's funny, so have I.
So you probably did a tour.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm feeling a press trip actually came up. That's the bigger story
I
here.
I think you're right.
Yes, I think that one of their...
Well, they're trying to counteract the bad publicity they've been getting.
I think that's certainly behind it.
Yeah.
And Stern actually travelled to Google, and they are just overwhelmed. And if you ever have been to California and the Google headquarters, you understand why. Because it is a fascinating
experience.
And
it couldn't be more different than going into a German media company. So,
absolutely,
of course, they're going to go there with big wide eyes. And look how
absolutely
crazy it is. And everyone's playing foosball and blah, blah, blah. But they should just be happy sitting in their nice offices on the Hamburg Hafen. At least that's my
small opinion.
I agree
with you, actually.
About this. Last word, quickly.
Well, very quickly, on the plus side, some of the things that the designs that are apparently being worked on are an anti-trembling fork that allows people with Parkinson's disease to eat on their own. That sounds very good. There's also a new network of hot air balloons to connect the whole planet, and contact lenses, Tyler, able to detect different glycemic levels for people who have diabetes.
Excellent for the next checkup. I'm going to have to leave it there. Imke Henkel from Die Zeit and France 24's Benedict Pavillot, thank you very much. Have a lovely Saturday, lovely weekend. That brings us to the end of this 144th edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. I think I'm back next week, or we might be sort of checking in from Toronto. You never know where we're going to be. If you have any comments or queries, let you drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the very same time next Saturday. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, goodbye.